You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Listen up, Launch Streeters. Tamara here. On today's podcast, we venture into the world of education for some deep innovation insights. You better believe that the massive changes, dealing with bureaucracies, changing expectations, legacy people that never want to change how they do things, all that we're feeling in the business world, they are feeling 100 times over in the education world. That's why I wanted to interview George Kuros, innovation thought leader in the education world, and the author of this fantastic book called The Innovator's Mindset, Empower Learning, Unleash Talent, and Lead a Culture of Creativity. I think you'll want to bring out the Trapper Keeper and number two pencil for this one. Did I just date myself? All right, let's get this started. George, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, let's just dig right in. So how would you describe the innovator's mindset? What is that?
Well, actually, the idea was spawned off of Carol Dweck's work. I'm sure most of your listeners have heard of her work or at least read her book about the idea of mindset. And we talked about like fixed and growth mindset, and growth is basically just having the belief in yourself that you can, you know, learn things over time. And because of my work in education, we saw that the growth mindset was crucial, but really not enough for the work that we're doing with our students. So I actually tried to take it a step further, where the growth mindset is actually a part of the innovator's mindset, but it's not only the belief in the ability of that you can learn, it's what you do, it's that you can do something with that learning, that you can actually apply it, you can take what you know and create something out of it. So I think this is not something that only applies to our students, but it's also something that we see is extremely crucial to our teachers, our principals, especially in a time of constraint, where we have, you know, a lot of issues in education. And so we're not looking for someone else to solve our problems. We're finding them ourselves and figuring it out. And so this totally applies not just to their time in school, but after school as well, you know, kids becoming entrepreneurs, developing businesses. And so this is kind of where we want our students to go.
Let me ask you this question, because something you said in there really clicked with me. It seems like there's a big difference between knowing, absorbing knowledge, thinking of a new idea, whatever it is, and actually implementing or at least bringing it to life. Why is that gap so hard for people to overcome, if that's even the right way to ask the question?
Well, I think we, especially like most of my experiences in education, there's nothing you can do in any class that I can simply carbon copy and it will work for a group of students, because every single classroom has a different group of students. So you can take knowledge, you can learn from what other people have done. But I think we really wanted to kind of push people to that next level where they're learning these things, but applying because their context is different. And this is something that we look at a lot of things that Google does, a lot of things that Apple does. And even though those are businesses, some of those practices really apply to education. But simply just trying to take what business does and applying it to education is not going to work. We have to know our system inside out. And so we're really trying to get people to move to that next level. And I think one of the reasons why this is so important is because just simply knowing, just simply being compliant is not going to be enough in a world that's, you know, continuously automating everything. And we want our people to actually go beyond simply knowing.
You know, I think there's two important things that you said that I just want to pause on for Launch Streeters out there. One is, you know, it's so important to take those learnings from other industries, organizations, kind of go wide, but then figure out how it applies to your world when you bring it back versus just trying to copy it. I think oftentimes, you know, people try to copy what other people do versus saying, hold on, let me put this through a filter and figure out how to apply it to me. And that's oftentimes, I think, why it fails. The second thing you said in there was about being compliant. And I mean, I think we all know the world is changing at a rapid pace. So if you're compliant, I think in a lot of ways, you're kind of moving backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something I say to our teachers is that if you are doing the same practice you were 10 years ago, you could be irrelevant now. And as the world continuously moves forward, if you are standing still, you are falling behind. And I think that when we talk about innovation, people get confused with it because the simple way that I define innovation in the book is doing new and better things. That's it. And so that innovation could be either iteration, it could be taking someone else's idea, remixing it to your own context, or it could actually be a total new invention. And so if you look at it in the concept of simply the iPhone, right? The original iPhone was actually an invention. It was an innovation, but a brand new thing that nobody had really seen anything like that before. But if nobody would want the original iPhone now, right? And there's an expectation, and that's like a 10-year-old phone, right? But at the time, it was the most amazing thing ever. But now the innovation is the iPhone X, and it's all the new features and doing that. So you can see the iteration of this, and I think that's what we're really trying to get people to understand is that it can be one of those two things, and sometimes we need just to iterate, but make it better. But sometimes we have to come up with something totally new and applicable to, because there's nothing that we have that's currently working.
You know, it's so funny. I have a 9-year-old and a 13-year-old, and they have my old phones. They get whatever I've discarded. And I think my 9-year-old has my 5, maybe even 4. And I look at that versus my 8, and I'm like, oh, that is so clunky and old. It's so funny. And it really wasn't that long ago.
Right, and it was the greatest thing ever.
Ever. Out, yeah, ever. Right? Yeah.
Like the iPhone 4 was like probably one of the biggest jumps from the one prior, right? And like, if you had a 3, it's like, seriously.
I know. Right? I know. But I look back, I'm like, that's so bad. Or not as bad. It's so just clunky and old and not, what we have today. So
yeah, and there's a quote I often use that says, in every organization, we expect innovation except for the ones we work in. and that's one I use, is that I always talk about, that, like how we complain about something that's not good enough, but we think that our practices will be relevant for 10 years.
So I want to dig into that. That's fascinating to me. In all the work that I do, every industry I go in is like, oh no, we now need to innovate, as if, last year they didn't, but that's why they're in the position they're in. So why is that? Why do we have such a myopic view when it comes to our own work versus, everybody else's industries and work out there?
I think the big reason is we just become complacent and comfortable with things, and we just see it as work. And one of the analogies that I use in the book is talking about Blockbuster and Netflix. And Blockbuster, if you actually look at past results, Blockbuster was doing very well. And a lot of people don't know this, but Netflix actually approached Blockbuster to purchase them, and Blockbuster basically said, we're good.
Like, yeah, we're okay here.
Yeah. and now this is a question I always ask, is that, Blockbuster still existed to this day. And I ask educators this all the time. Would you invest your money in their stocks, or would you rather put it in Netflix? And people kind of laugh and scoff at me. I said, what about 10 years ago? Because 10 years ago, people would have, probably put money into Blockbuster, not seeing that. And this is the connection of the two is actually very important. And Katie Martin, she's a good friend of mine. She formerly worked at the University of San Diego, but she works with the Buck Institute, focused on project-based learning. And she said something that was really profound to me. And she said, the past research doesn't actually matter if the context in the future changes. Mm-hmm. So the past research of Blockbuster actually showed that it was working in the way that it was doing, but the context was changing right in front of its eyes, and it was not paying attention. And I think that you have to kind of look at what you're doing that's working, but also understand what is changing and what's going to disrupt us. Like, we don't want an education. There's all of a sudden an Uber of education that forces us to change things. So I'm all about, let's make the change happen before that does, so that that we're not pushed aside.
It's so interesting that one of the things I talk about in my keynotes is that the book Good to Great by Jim Collins, which has always had held up as this iconic book of business, half of the case studies in there are gone and the other half are irrelevant. So it's true what got them to that point, but to your point, I love that the context around them is changing. So you can't really apply that to the future. I want to get back into innovation education for a second. So you know, I think I feel it as a parent why it's so important. And maybe it's obvious to a lot of people out there, but will you talk a little bit as the expert of why is innovation becoming more and more important to education, particularly in the time we're in now?
Well, I think that you're looking at all of the access kids have to information. And it used to be that school was the sole source of information, that where if I needed to get information, it was either the library that had limited hours and maybe like an hour after school that I could actually access, or the other place would be actually school for my teachers. They were the source of knowledge. You couldn't really even fact check a teacher, right? Whatever they said
right.
was basically the truth.
And if it was in the book, right, that was it.
Right. Yeah. So that's what we stuck with. But now where we can get information from any source, that actually innovation is becoming more and more crucial. And that's why like school is no longer the place of knowledge. I do not need a teacher to get content. And I do say this to teachers to make them feel uncomfortable, is that if all you do is you are about the content, you're already irrelevant. It's already too late for you if that's all there is. And so we talk about relationships because just like in work, you know, if you feel valued, which I think a lot of kids don't feel valued when they're in school, that yeah. if they weren't there, people, you know, they would believe that nobody would really care. That relationship piece is fundamental, not only to business, but to what we do in schools as well. But it's actually, what do kids do with this knowledge? And there's still a lot of schools that will block things like YouTube from their students. Not really understanding, this is the biggest library in the world. And when I get on schools for blocking it, They'll say, yeah, you know, it is important that we actually access information. I say, you know, that is one component, but what are your kids actually creating? And too often we have students, when we ask them, we'll say, what do you want to do when you grow up? And they'll say, YouTuber, and adults will literally laugh at their faces. And we're like, why is that a bad thing? Like, yeah. why would you? Because they didn't grow up wanting to be that, but, you know, they'll say, oh, okay, that's cute. Now let's prepare you to be a lawyer, a doctor, or a teacher, right? The traditional jobs. But there's, you know, YouTubers that are doing extremely well from themselves, doing something they love, and creating something. And so we want to, we understand the context of what we have to do in school. And one of the things that I always tell educators is we don't want you thinking outside of the box. We want you to be innovative inside of the box because you work in a box. You're never going to have a ton of money. You're going to still have to teach curriculum. You still have to do the standards. Like, I can't say don't worry about those things because then they'll lose their jobs. And, you know, what am I going to do then? Right. I'm going to house a bunch of teachers without jobs. And so it is that we have that constraint, but there's some really powerful ways that we have kids learning curriculum, learning stuff, but actually posting on YouTube, and their understanding it is so much deeper, but then they're also learning all these other skills throughout the process.
You know, it's funny, both of my kids do screen video captures of them playing Minecraft, and they post them on YouTube. They do it all the time. And it's their favorite thing to do. And at first I really scoffed at it, like, oh, it's like you're just playing video games all day. But the truth is they're actually creating. They're creating worlds, and then they're sharing these worlds with other people, and they're creating in the moment. And it's incredible, to your point about YouTube. And I had to fight, like, I'm a Gen Xer, right? I'm about to turn 45, so I had to fight my that's not creative time. But it really is. It was really incredible. But my question for you is, if we know, you know, kids are changing. You know, we know that. We know the world. To your point, I mean, access to a computer is access to knowledge, period. Mm-hmm. Or even access to your phone, right, is access to knowledge.
Absolutely.
All the knowledge you could possibly fathom, in fact, more than you could take in a lifetime. We know that. And we know that today's or in tomorrow's marketplace, the job market is not the, you know, because I did good on a test, well on a test. See, I didn't even do well. you know, you're set up for the job. So given all that, why is the education world so resistant to change? And really, is it fair to say that it is?
Well, I don't know. I would say in the last 5 years, from what I've seen, because I do travel all over the world and see schools up close, I would say in the last 5 years, there has been more of a significant change in what is happening in education than there was 20 years prior, the years I've seen. And so there are a lot of people that are moving forward. You'll see things like, I'm not sure if your audience is aware of like things like Google time, where they would give 20% time. And a lot of schools have actually adopted a similar idea, and they've recreated that, where they Google would give their employees 20% of their time to actually, you know, go into their own path to move Google's vision forward. And now a lot of schools are doing what's called Genius Hour. And so these kids actually have time to explore their passions and their interests, because we're trying to develop them as learners. And a very good friend of mine named AJ Giuliani said, the job of schools is not to prepare kids for something, it's to prepare them for anything. And we know that jobs change over time, whatever the stats are, like, we don't really care. Like, we don't really say, well, 50% of the jobs that exist now won't exist in 10 years. That doesn't matter to us, because we can't actually accurately predict that. But right, what we can predict is that if we prepare our kids to it, that they are adaptable to anything, then they'll be fine no matter what comes along their way. And so you're seeing a lot of schools gravitate towards this, but some schools are being held back, and it's not necessarily the teachers. Sometimes it's parents who, you know, you even kind of admitted yourself, you were struggling with some of these things. And I truly believe that parents want the best for their children, but if they know nothing different than their experience, they assume their experience was the best.
Yeah.
And so we really try to actually, when I was a principal, one of the things I try to do was to actually bring parents in, and we wouldn't just talk about new things we would do. We would actually have like blogging nights. We would have kids, or we'd have teachers or parents do social media and see the impact of it and how they could use it in meaningful ways in their own practice. And a lot of the parents would walk away and say, this is so much better than what I had when I was a kid. And then they're totally fine with it. But if they experience nothing different, they don't really understand why it would actually be better for their own children.
You know, you said something in there that LaunchTreaters out there really want you to hear, because I think no matter if you're in education or business, and I'm not going to say it exactly as well as you just said, so maybe you can repeat it, but the fact that you have to be ready for anything, the fact that you have to be able to adapt and change and be a critical thinker and a learner is so much more important than a specific skill. I'm not saying it as clearly as you did, but to me, that's a really powerful thought of, you know, we've got to prepare our next generation of leaders and the leaders we are today to really be able to adapt.
Yeah, and we encourage our educators to take risks in their learning. And when people hear the word risk, they are thinking danger, right? They're thinking, you know, like, usually they conjure up something physical, you know, a physical risk to themselves, to their health, whatever. And when we say risk, what I really try to do is define what we mean by this. And simply we say risk is moving from a comfortable known in the pursuit of an unknown that is possibly better. And you can see that this is not just in professional life, but personal life. We will stick with things that we know don't work. And I'm sure many of your listeners who are listening to this right now
totally
have been in relationships that they knew weren't working, and they stayed for way longer than they should have because that's where their comfort level was. And when they look back, if they moved on from those relationships to, you know, something much better, they're probably thinking, look at all the time I wasted. You know, of course you learn from those experiences, but, you know, how much time did you waste because you were so scared to move to something that was better? And that's what we're asking of our teachers, is that a lot of times we do things that we see with our kids that we know are not working, but we stick with them because we don't know anything different, and we have to be comfortable. And if something's working great for students, there's no need to get rid of it, to be honest with you. But when we see something that's not, to just continuously do it over and over again is not helpful. And there's a really great saying, and I don't know who to attribute it to. They said, if the teacher teaches a child something the same way 100 times, and the student doesn't understand it, it is not the student who is a slow learner.
Oh my gosh. That was me the other night trying to teach homework to one of my kids. Yeah. I did some math, and I was like, I'm not getting through because I don't know how to do this. Like, I don't know how to change my approach to you.
Yeah. And some people just say it louder. And
that's
a different approach. Like, if I say it louder and slower,
that's
then
right. Yeah. It turns out I tried that. It doesn't work. And that's when I realized, oh my God, it's me. It's all me. But I think that's such a great leadership lesson overall of, if you keep hollering the same things and you're not getting the result you're looking for, you're the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people are very, you know, I say that all the time, that you can't just simply say it the same way. You have to rethink your approach. And one of the disconnects that we see, because I actually think if there's a school that's not moving forward, it's not because of the teachers, it's because of the leadership.
Yeah.
And that's where I would always point to. And one of the things that a lot of leaders do that's ineffective, and we know this, is they'll say, hey, you should go do all of these different things in your classroom while I do everything the same in my leadership. And so what we really try to do is that if we want something, a different practice in the classroom, when we have those days with our teachers, we actually recreate what we want to see in the classroom so the teachers experience it. Because then the teachers, we are a creature, all of us are a creature of experience. And Bruce Dixon, he's an educator in Australia, and he said something really profound to me about education. He said, in no profession in the world do you watch someone do your job for 16 years and then go do it. And so we see a lot of young teachers coming in who we, you know, a lot of people say, oh, these young teachers are going to do all these new crazy things. And they are the most traditional teachers you see because they teach the way they were taught. It has nothing to do. And that's one of the things I think is really important, is that this has nothing to do with age. It has everything to do with how you think. And that's really important to understand, is that I see teachers in their 70s, some of the most innovative educators I've ever seen, where I see educators in their early 20s who are the most traditional teachers I've ever seen, and vice versa. It has nothing to do with age. It's all how you think.
You know, George, I love that we're having this conversation about education, because I think it relates to so many things, as you know, in business and leadership. And I think education is one of the critical factors in our society that we need to figure out and get right and move forward with. But the thing that I just keep thinking about is, God, if innovation is so important, like, what happens if we don't innovate here? What happens if we continue in the slow pace that we've seen in the past? What's going to happen to the education world, and kind of, I want to translate out bigger too.
Well, there is a really great a visual, and it talked about, like, Blockbuster didn't end because Netflix came along. Blockbuster ended because it didn't understand customers. It's the same with Uber disrupting the taxi company. Everyone points to the technology. It's just someone thought differently about how they actually do their work. And There's a where I live in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, we've had Uber for a long, long time, actually, like, surprisingly long for the size of our community. And I think it was in January of 2016 to June 30th, 2016, there was actually a moratorium on Uber being allowed to actually run in our city, because they had to do all these little check marks. And I always talk about this in my presentations, is that for a 6-month period, the taxi companies actually had two options of what they could do for 6 months, where they were the only game in town for what they were doing. They could complain about Uber, say it's horrible, you shouldn't use it, blah, blah, blah. Or they could have made the taxi companies so good that when Uber came back, everyone would choose a taxi. And excuse me. Of course, they chose the first one. And as soon as Uber came back, everyone just went back to Uber. and you can fight change, you can embrace change, you can create change. Whatever your choice is, it's not going away. And that's what we're really trying to focus on.
I love that you, first of all, yes, I 100% agree with you about the change, and that, you know, it's happening. So you might as well figure out a way to leverage it or create your own change, because it's going to happen no matter what. And I love that example you just gave about Uber. I was just talking to somebody the other day about taxis and how, you know, my frustration around, why didn't they say, all right, why are people moving to Uber? What is it about that experience that they love so much? And how, and what's changed about their behavior that we can tap into, as opposed to, you know, fighting the change at the legal level, which just pisses off the customer, frankly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're so right about that. That whole part is so fascinating. I want to, in the time that we have, make sure that we connect the dots for people. You have this great book called The Innovator's Mindset, and we'll put a link in the show notes and all that, where you give a lot of practical tools for bringing more innovation to your leadership, teaching engagement. What are some of your top favorite tips from the book that Launch Streeters can implement immediately?
One of the focuses I talk about is the 8 characteristics of the innovator's mindset. And the first characteristic is being empathetic. And I think that whether you're in education, whether you're in business, that is, you just said it, that, you know, when Uber is taken away from people, you didn't really hurt Uber as much as you did the customer,
yeah.
Right? But those 6 months, by the way, I did everything to avoid taxes.
Right.
Right?
Totally.
It wasn't like,
suddenly you're driving
said, you know,
everywhere.
Yeah. Like I did everything at that time. So we talk about the notion of empathy, understanding who you are. One of the concepts I adopted from an educator named Ewan McIntosh, he talked about the idea of, we don't want our kids just to be problem solvers, but we want them to be problem finders. So we want you to actually look at what's going on in the world and then pose the solutions. Because a lot of people, you know, they're waiting for someone to solve a problem. And I think they're not actually actively going out and initiating stuff themselves. And an article I just read on the weekend, and I blogged about it, was talking about the notion of the one thing that makes people successful that, you know, that all people share is they initiate. They actually go out and they go make things happen. So we want our kids that when they go to, like, let's say they go work for someone else, which is not necessarily the goal, right? Sometimes
right.
we want our kids to be entrepreneurs, but, you know, a lot of our kids will still work for people. I, as a boss, don't want the people that work for me to continuously ask me, what should I do?
Right.
I don't want that. I want them to go figure out stuff to make it happen. One of the other characteristics that I talk about is the idea of resiliency. And this is, no matter what your situation is, we don't understand, you know, individuals. There's families that, you know, that are well off that struggle, and as well as, you know, families that, you know, deal with poverty that struggle. Like, everyone's situation is so unique and individual. You know, you could deal with depression or there's so many different things. So how do we develop that resiliency that no matter what situation, we can find ways and work through this? And this is something we want to develop our kids. We know that some people have more advantages than others, but if you don't work hard, if you don't actually develop that grit and resiliency, you are going to be limited in your opportunities. But the other thing that might be surprising is we talk about the importance of reflection, that we look back to see what we're doing and focus on it to actually help us move forward. And what has worked, what has challenged us, what has not worked. And I think that a lot of places, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and they're like, I don't have time to reflect. I'm like, well, you don't have you're basically saying you don't have time to learn about what you've actually done. And like, that's a scary concept. So as a school principal, one of the things that I did all the time is I would actually basically lock my office and I would blog for about 30 minutes, you know, once a week on my own time, and I would schedule it so that I could actually critically think about the work that I was doing, which made me really think about where we're going moving forward. And I think that when you, a lot of people talk about reflecting in a journal, which I think has its merits. But when I reflected openly that anybody in the world could read it, there's much more accountability to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And Clive Thompson, he's an author, talks about how the internet actually makes us smarter. One of the things he said that I thought was quite powerful, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, anyone can win an argument inside their head, but when you have to face an audience, you have to be truly convincing. And so I actually talk about how when I blog, I have to give a 360 degree of the idea that I'm sharing. I actually have to think about who's going to challenge this and what is going to be their challenge and how can I debunk it before they even have the opportunity to say it.
Yeah, it seems like we get so wrapped up in this idea of being busy that we miss the opportunity to reflect, because we tend to, at least this is how I feel in the U.S. for sure, we tend to measure someone's hard work success by how busy they are, how little time they have. And I think you're so right. I mean, I think reflection time is so important. And the other layer that you're saying on there is you have to be able to communicate those ideas too and actually think through your thoughts. That sounded so lame when I said it out loud, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, there's so many brilliant people that have done nothing with their brilliance.
Yeah.
Like, because they can't actually share an idea. And that is actually one of the things that we really communicate, is that we have a ton of brilliant students who cannot effectively communicate their ideas to someone. And so if you can't communicate an idea, people are you know, if you're talking from a business sense, they're never going to buy what you're selling because they don't see the importance of it. And so that communication skill is very crucial. And one of the things when I keynote, when I present, I've used very, I don't use any bullet points. I use visuals and videos to reemphasize. And plus I understand that most people have the attention span of a goldfish, if not lower. So it's very quick in the way that I'm doing it. And people have really appreciated the way I present. Whereas I see a lot of people still use bullet points. They do something extremely boring. And why this bothers me, especially in education, is because teachers are the hardest people to teach, because they do it for a living. So yeah. Their expectation is extremely higher. And so they'll sit through that boring bullet point presentation and they'll say, that was the worst thing ever. Then they'll go to their students and then they'll make them do bullet point presentations. I'm like, why would you put
you don't even like it yourself.
Yeah, why would you do that? But again, that goes back to the notion of how we are creatures of habit. We do what we've experienced, whether we know it works or not. So we're trying to get people to really not just come up with these great ideas, but teach them the ability to communicate with other people.
How do you pattern interrupt someone to get them to realize, hey, what you're doing isn't working. You don't even like it when it's done to you. So it's not working. Because I have to imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that oftentimes that happens not out of malicious intent or laziness, but a lack of maybe recognition or a lack of knowing what else to do.
Yeah, there's a story I share in my book I can't remember who shared it exactly, but it's from the Harvard Business Review. And the simple quote is, to innovate, disrupt your routine. And a gentleman talks about how there's an executive from an airline company, and they brought all the top executives to talk about how to improve economy seating in on their planes. The problem with this is you have a bunch of people talking about something they've never experienced because they all fly business class. so they really have no idea how horrible economy seating is on many planes. So what they actually did, they had a first day of meetings talking about this stuff. They had no idea on what to do. So what the top executive did is they were staying in a 5-star hotel. He replaced all their beds with economy seating for the evening. So they actually had to sleep in the chairs.
Oh, so painful.
Right. And so the next day, they have a ton of ideas. Yeah. And I think that's that notion of innovate, disrupt your routine is something that we have really pushed forward. And we, probably about 8 or 9 years ago when I was a principal, there is to be no paper handouts at a meeting. Everything would be, accessible through things like Google Docs, and you have access. And it wasn't because I don't think paper is good or anything like this, but I wanted everyone to kind of be forced to bring a computer, because as our school was going, that every kid would actually have a device. If you don't know how to effectively use it, you're not going to be able to teach your kids. And so there was grumbling at the beginning, but then when people saw how much quicker, how much more efficient, how much deeper our learning can go through this, they not only appreciated themselves, they started recreating those experiences for their classrooms, which was the whole purpose. I don't need to teach teachers how to write on a piece of paper. They already know how to do this. But some of them that are uncomfortable with some of the technology that was coming into the classroom. The only way to get them comfortable with students bringing it in is that they made it a part of the work that they did every single day. And I think that's one of the things we try to focus on is disrupting that routine. What is something that we do that we could do differently and better? And I think not just different, but it has to be better than what we were doing before.
George, the other kind of theme I'm hearing from a lot of your kind of expertise and experience is also, if you want people to be more innovative, if you want to elevate the innovation game in your world, is get people to experience it. Don't just tell them about it. Actually experience the pain, the good, the what you're trying to do, whatever it is.
Absolutely. And I think that the best way for anyone who's listening to this is, don't try to change people, create the experience where people will learn to change themselves, but to model that yourself. There's a really great comic it was in a Canadian newspaper, and the first visual, it has a person speaking at a podium, and it says, "Who wants change?" And every single person's hand is risen. But then the next frame, it says, "Who wants to change?" And everyone's hand is down. Right? Yeah. It's all like, you need to do things differently. I'm good at what I'm doing. And so I continuously try to do different things in my own practice to experience them so I can have an understanding not just simply read someone else's work. And I think a lot of teachers, you know, they'll talk about, oh, well, the research says. I'm like, well, have you done it with the kids? Like, if you're looking at a kid and it doesn't work, does it matter what the research said?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. If it doesn't work in real life, who cares?
Yeah. And for me, I make a lot of judgments based on the people I'm working with, not just solely based on what someone did on the other side of the world with that very select group of people. Now, will I use that research? Absolutely. But it doesn't mean I'm beholden to it. I will use things to serve our kids. And I think as an educator, I would hope a parent would understand that I will do whatever I can. I will figure out whatever way I can to make your kid have a better experience in school.
Does your work, or let me ask this differently. Do you do a lot of work outside of education as well? Because as we're having this conversation, you know, as someone in the business world and who runs a company, I'm thinking, oh, this really applies. I need to get my team to experience this stuff. Oh, I need to have them disrupt a little bit their routine so that we're thinking differently. Do you do a lot of that work? And if you do, what do you experience in that, or how does that translate?
Yeah, I think that some of the same problems that we've dealt with in education are not, you know, particular to education, that they are throughout the entire business world. And I am actually blessed to have a brother who's in education and a brother who's in business. And I am the youngest. And so they would argue awesome. All the time, and I would just pick up ideas from both of them. And,
perfect.
Brilliant. I think a lot of the principles that we're talking about really do apply to business. And one of the things that I've really aspired to is that businesses will come to education to learn from us, not the other way around, which, because it kind of is that same way. And I think that just the focus on, we focused on things in our schools like strengths-based leadership, tapping into what a person is really good at and moving forward from there, as opposed to continuously focusing on weaknesses, which is something written by Tom Rapp. Another concept we talk about is, you know, embracing an open culture, is that we don't really care where the ideas come from within an organization. We just want the best ideas. But if you open up if you open up your communication, if you open up your transparency in the work, then the best ideas seem to get to the top. And one thing about Twitter is that there is no everyone's an avatar. Everyone's the same little square box on Twitter. And what propels people is not necessarily their personality. It's what they share. It's what they actually do. The ideas,
not their job title.
No. You know, you can be a superintendent, but if all your ideas, you know, hold back kids, nobody cares you're a superintendent anymore on Twitter, because, you know, you're in a kind of an equal space there where, you know, anyone can share their ideas. And I think that some of those concepts and some of the other tenets that I talk about in the book, we talk about specifically not focusing on technology, but what we want to happen in the classroom, and then talking about what technology could actually accelerate those things. Where a lot of companies, they just throw a bunch of technology at people and then they think the practices will change, where the mindset is exactly the same. And so these are all tenets that, you know, apply just as well to it's kind of interesting because they apply just as well to an educational setting versus a business setting. Do you want your employees to be simply compliant, or do you want them to be innovative and create, you know, amazing ideas for your company to move it forward? It's the same thought in our classrooms. We don't want our kids just to be compliant. We want them to be forward thinking. We want them to challenge ideas. We want them to be critical thinkers, that by the time, you know, they're going and developing their own businesses, they're working for other people, they are those initiators that we would want. And I think a good business environment and a good classroom are a lot closer than people actually give credit to.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the lessons go both ways. And, you know, I'm thinking over here as a parent, of course, I want my kids to be set up for success. And I know that the world is changing and that I can check off a box no longer works to get you to where you want to go, wherever that is. And you just have to adapt. And as an employer, I'm thinking, ooh, I really want to hire those people.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it goes both ways. I'm curious, and I probably should have asked you this in the beginning, but what got you so passionate, not just about education, because I get that's kind of, you know, where your career was, but also specifically around innovation inside education?
Well, I think about 8 years ago, I was given the opportunity to start a brand new role in my school district. And I was also given the opportunity to give it the title. And the title that was suggested was Head of Educational Technology. And I said, if we call it that, people will just want me to fix their computer. Like, yeah. They don't care what I'm teaching them. They are like, oh, you know how to use tech? Can you fix my computer? It's broke. And that's not why I got into the work that I'm doing. And so we called it the Division Principal of Innovative Teaching and Learning. And if you go back 8 years ago, you cannot find that title anywhere. I was probably one of the first in the world who actually had that title in my job. But in education, right? Innovation is something that we talked about in business forever, but education, sure. It was not really normal. And the reality of it, to be honest with you, I actually had no interest or had no idea what innovation actually meant. Like, we just said, oh, this sounds great. Let's do, yeah, something different. So I was actually given the opportunity to explore what does innovation and education actually mean in my role, and why is this important for what we do. And so I had a really great boss, superintendent, his name's Tim Mons, and he actually brought me in because he knew I would challenge him. He knew I would, you know, challenge his ideas. And his whole mindset was, we want the best ideas. Like, don't be a jerk about it, but you know, you need to push me. And so you have, you know, a subordinate pushing their boss, because the whole focus is how do we create the best schools. And so exploring that, I saw it as really crucial. But innovation was what I really found out through the process, is innovation is not a thing, it's a way we think.
Yeah.
And so that became a norm. And a lot of experiences that I had as a principal, and a lot of the ownership I had, you know, in the work that I was doing, I said, you know, I really love these opportunities I'm having. Why are we not creating this for our students? And so we really said, like, innovation should not be just for, we don't want our teachers thinking differently and trying different things, but then holding their kids back and just focusing on compliance. And now you see this is becoming a norm. And what is really important is that I've seen a lot of schools who will take someone's position, head of technology, and then call them the head of innovation, but nothing actually changes in their role. So none of the practices actually change. And so if you do not change the thinking, that will not change. And so that's where I really got into it in the first place. And now it's just, you know, part of the work that I do every single day.
Well, I think you couldn't be closer to the truth in that. You know, I see a lot of organizations do this where they invest thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in the latest technology to foster innovation, you know, a collaborative work board or, you know, something virtual, but they didn't spend the time to invest in their people and getting them to think differently. And then they wasted a lot of money because nobody uses whatever the application is, right, of the day that they thought would change the culture. And, you know, the other thing I want to highlight for Launch Street listeners about this story you just shared is that is such a wonderful example of what you were talking about earlier, that the leadership has to be innovative if they want that to go down into the classrooms as well. You can't ask the teachers to do it and leadership not to. And you, mm-hmm, had a leader who was willing to bring you in to challenge them, which conflict is so important to innovation. We always try to shy away, you know, we think we should shy away from it. The truth is, it's brilliant. But you guys really embrace that at the leadership level. And I'm going to guess, right, that then trickled out across other areas too.
Absolutely. And whenever I do talks, there's a lot of people who feel very uncomfortable with what I'm saying. And I tell them straight up, you are going to feel uncomfortable with what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I'm going to challenge you. But as soon as I'm done, I have a question, you know, like usually have like a question period, take some of their ideas, whatever. But I always say, if you're going to challenge me, you need to do it in the room. Don't do it outside in the parking lot when I'm gone.
Yeah.
You're
totally
going to do this in the room. And so I think that conflict is really important. It makes me really think deeply about the work that I do. But maybe I said something wrong. Maybe, you know, maybe you took it the wrong way and maybe I can clarify. Or maybe I'm totally off. But if you don't challenge me, none of us get better. And so let's do this in the room. And people love taking me up on that offer. And I tried to not only share ideas, but share stories, you know, to their ideas. And I think a lot of times we want to talk and just say, everyone just says, oh, you're awesome. We agree with everything you're saying.
Yeah.
Whereas that doesn't necessarily help you move forward. And if I don't give them that opportunity to challenge me in the room, they'll just walk away and say, well, that works in theory, but that's not going to work for us.
And then there's no buy-in because they don't agree with you. And, you know, the other thing I found with conflict is I've learned the hard way that there are gaps in my thinking. It turns out I don't have all the answers. Shocking. So, you know, if my business manager, Laura, is brilliant at this, she challenges me all the time. And it's great because she points out things that I didn't even think about or consider. And it just makes the idea better in the long run.
Well, I think one of the things that I really try to do is when people challenge me, is I listen to what they are saying and I work backwards from them to implement what I'm talking in their own words. And so usually they're a lot closer to what I'm saying in what they're actually saying, but they don't see it. But when you – this is something I always talk about is that you're not trying to get people to move over all the way to your side of thinking. You're trying to find out where they are and then go to them and then just pull them. Because if they feel valued, they feel validated in what they're saying, but you're just trying to help them move forward. And I always say this to teachers when I work with them in groups that I work with. I don't think any of you are bad at your job. I just think that all of us can get better. Yeah. And that's simple as that.
That's a great way to say it. I can't believe we are at the end because I feel like I have 10 more questions for you. But where can people go to connect with you? Let's make sure we don't miss that.
You could actually connect with me on Twitter. My Twitter is twitter.com/@gcouros, so GCOUROS. And you can also email me at georgecouros, or sorry, you can find my blog, georgecouros.ca. And obviously my book, The Innovator's Mindset, you can find it on Amazon. One of the things I challenge people is that even though a lot of the stuff I write about is education, if you are that innovator, you can look at the stuff that I'm doing and the stuff that I share, and you got to find what works for you and apply it to your context. If you simply say, well, this is all written for education, you've kind of missed the point of this whole podcast.
Yeah, I would agree 100% with that. And that's why I wanted to have you on is because I felt like what you were talking about I'm passionate about education, but for the podcast, what you were talking about is so relevant to the business world and innovators, entrepreneurs, leaders across the board. So I agree with you. If you're listening out there and you didn't get something out of this, shame on you, because come on now. It was a good interview. So last question for you is, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you, hobby, passion, experience?
Well, I actually, surprisingly enough, I consider myself quite the entrepreneur. Obviously passionate about leadership. I actually had no interest in going into education. I had a degree when I was 22 years old that was not applicable to basically anything, to be honest with you. And I saw a movie that changed my life. It was Billy Madison. And so I'm like,
Billy Madison?
Absolutely. And so I'm actually a trained kindergarten teacher.
Oh.
Yeah, which is surprising to a lot of people.
Oh, I wouldn't have guessed that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's where my training was for the work that I do. I just really love working with, you know, young students. Now, I actually, surprisingly enough, I never taught kindergarten. I've taught every grade except for kindergarten. I taught grade 1 to 12. I've had different experiences in education. But, yeah, I really appreciate, you know, working with students. And if you actually – the really interesting thing, if you look at kindergarten kids – they are some of the most curious and innovative people you'll ever meet. And one of the things I say to people is that if a kid leaves school less curious than when they started, we have failed them. And they're already asking questions when they walk in. So we want to stoke that, not to extinguish it.
You know, it's funny. I saw this stat somewhere. You'd know if this was, you know, 100% true or not, but it was something like preschool kids ask their parents no fewer than 100 questions a day. And I think we as parents have to remember that that's an amazing thing. And we should be grateful, not be like, because I said so.
Right. Which a lot of teachers, including myself, are guilty of saying.
Yeah.
Well, because, why do I have to learn this? Because I told you.
Right.
Right. And so we have to go beyond that. And we take advantage of, you know, the authority that we have when saying things like that, as opposed to, you know, really think, why do they have to learn this?
Right. Why are they asking me this question? That's kind of interesting. George, thank you so much for joining us. This has been really insightful. And I know that our viewers or listeners are going to get a ton out of this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.